Okay, so what I'd like to learn for the next few minutes, Mirtz Hashem, is an idea that kind of developed over the years. I will start from the first Makor on the top. I saw this brought down in a tremendous publication called the Shvili Pinchas, put out by Pinchas Friedman of Belzer Dayan, who puts out tremendous Divrei Torah every single week, and Svarim. And I saw this Makor in one of his publications a few years back, and I kind of developed it a little bit on my own. But he says like this: this is a very, very obscure Makor, a very obscure source that can be found in the back of a big Masach HaShabbos. You know, you have all the things in the back. You have the Rush and the Marsha and the Ran with the Rif, then generally after all that you have what's called the Mordechai. The Mordechai is a Rishon quoted in Halacha often. You know, not one of the Rishonim that's quoted the most, but certainly a very, very important one of the Rishonim. And on that, on the Mordechai, there's a commentary called the Shilti HaGiborim. And it's not even the main Mordechai, it's like the addendum in the back of the Mordechai, and it's the Shilti HaGiborim Perush or notes on the second Mordechai in the back of Masechta Shabbos. And he brings down the following thing, and you can see it inside. Berov Hashanim Chanukah Chal B'Parshas Miketz. Most years, Chanukah, Shabbos Chanukah, is Parshas Miketz. So he says a few remuzim, a few hints to this fact. Now, nothing in Torah is random. Nothing in the Jewish year is random. And a very beautiful area of Torah study is the cross connection, the intersection, if you will, between the yearly calendar with the holidays to the Parsha calendar with the Parshas of Chumash. Right now, on face value, no. Great question. Right, just to say it out. There's the yearly calendar with the months and the holidays that follow the months, and we know there's one big intersection every year, obviously. Simchas Torah, fantastic, right? We always read V'zos HaBracha and begin Breishis on Simchas Torah, and the calendar is made, the parashios are structured so that will be able to happen. And there are some other few that Chazal or Metakin have to be done. Like, for example, we always have to read the Tochacha in Parshas Bichukosai before Shavuos, right? That's a takana of Chazal, and we always have to read the Tochacha of Parshas Kisavo always before Tishrei, before Rosh Hashanah. It could be 1 week before, it could be 2 weeks before, depending on the year. So those are two takanas that Chazal made. But other than that, the interconnection between the Parshios and the holidays and the months is seemingly unrelated, seemingly not, you know, randomly connected. However, there's a famous idea brought down from the Shla, the Shnei Luchos HaBris, of Yeshayahu Horowitz, a great Kabbalist from Italy, from the 1500s. So he famously said that the Shabbosos and the Parshios are always going to be intrinsically connected to the holiday seasons that they are around. They're always going to be related to the themes of the days and the weeks that surround the Parshios. And because of that, I'm sure many of you heard already, we had a guest speaker, and I'm sure there's been more, about the interplay between these Parshios, the Parshios, specifically the Parshios of Yosef, last week's Parsha Vayesha, this week's Parsha Miketz, next week's Parsha Vayigash, and how they relate to Chanukah. But the Shilta Giborim over here says that Parshios Miketz most years, if not all, but I think but most years, he says, Barov Hashanah, maybe there could be some exceptions, and if it's not on Chanukah, it'll certainly be right around Chanukah. Miketz will generally be the Shabbos that's associated with Chanukah. So therefore, he says, what are some remazim, what are some hints in Parshas Miketz that can express this relationship to Chanukah? So I'm just going to skip to the last one, on the fourth line down, where he says, Or the end of the third line.
Can Hanukkah have two Shabbases?
It can, yes.
It starts on Friday.
Yes, it can. Okay. It can. It's not. I don't believe it's very common. I don't believe it's very common, but I think it can happen. I think it has happened before, if I'm not mistaken. So he says, Vani Yotav HaKosev, the Shulta Gimurim says, Kibalti Simen Acher Parshas Vayhi Miketz, I have another relationship, another interplay, another intersect, another simen, another sign that Hanukkah is revealed in Parshas Miketz. And what's that? It's from these words, Utvoach Tevach V'Hachen. Literally translated, as in if anybody has a chumash in front of you, these words can be found in Parshas Miketz. I'll show you where.
Would you like me to grab some chumash from the other room?
No. Thank you. I appreciate it. It's not necessary.
Yeah, there's black one. Who doesn't watch today?
In Perek Mem Gimel Pasuk Tezayin 43:16, the Torah says this is when the brothers come down on the second trip, bringing, who do they bring down with them on their second trip? They bring Binyamin back. Very good, Bini. You always count on Bini. The Torah says Vayar Yosef Itam, Yosef sees them as Binyamin. He sees Binyamin. He sees Binyamin with them. Vayomer Lasher Albeso, he says to the people overseeing, presiding on his house, his helpers, his servants, his cooks, he says, Havei Asanashim Abaisa, bring the people inside, Utevoach Tevach V'Hachem, and slaughter, have some meat slaughtered, and prepare it to make a feast. Says the Shilta Kiburin back in the source that I gave you, Utevoach Tevach V'Hachem, those words, slaughter a cattle, meaning a nice cow, in order to make a good barbecue. He says, Tevach V'Hachem, Hachet mi Tevach, Vateva min hachem hem osios Chanukah. If you look at those words, Tvach Tevach v'hachem, Chet, the last letter of Tevach is a Chet, if anybody's following inside, Chet, Vav, Hey, Chaf, Nun, those letters, put them together, what word do you get? You get Chanukah. You scramble it a little bit, but you get the word Chanukah. V'samach l'su'udo sh'osim Chanukah, and that is a hint, that is a remez for the festive meals that we make on Hanukkah. Baruch Hashem, we've already had some, and we have more to come. So I want to ask a question, and this is a question that the Shvili Pinchas asked, but I'm going to take it in my own direction. Why would Yosef say at that moment to his brothers, when they come down to Mitzrayim for the second time, basically what's he making them, according to this remez, according to this drush, right? And this is the title of this little chabura, right? What's he making them? He's making them a... not just any party. He's making them a Hanukkah party. Why is the remez to Hanukkah in this week's parsha at that specific moment when Yosef sees the brothers now for a second time? They brought with them Binyamin, and they're coming down another time to bring more food because the famine is so heavy in the land. Why at this juncture is there a remez? Is there a hint? Is the Torah revealing to us the celebration of Hanukkah, which will be how many years later than this? Let's say around 1,000, roughly. What? Give or take. Say it again?
I said a cool few thousand.
Not a few thousand. No, let's say around, I don't know, between, let's say around 1,000. No, around 1,000. Let's say Hanukkah is around 160? No. Hanukkah is around, is it 250 before 80. The Common Era? No, before the Common Era? And Yetzias, this is 200 years around before Tzias Mitzrayim. Yeah, between 1,000 and 1,500 years. Why at this moment is Yosef and the Torah giving us this hint, giving us this little remez, this little echo, if you want to call it, of Hanukkah, which is going to happen many hundreds of years later at this moment? So I want to share with you the following, if you choose to accept it. To review the parasha a little bit, what happened? Obviously, we know the story with Yosef. Yosef gets out of the pit and works his way up to power, and he is the head honcho in Mitzrayim. There's a famine in the land back with our family, back with Yaakov and his family, And the Torah says that Yaakov sends his sons down because they needed food, and they send down to Mitzrayim. They get down to Mitzrayim right away. Yosef sees them, right? He knows them, he recognizes them, but they don't recognize him. And the whole story with with the setup, and they get food, but unfortunately he accuses, what does he accuse them of?
Binyamin is stealing.
Not Binyamin. Binyamin's not there this time around. Who's there? Right? He accuses Shimon, right? Or he holds Shimon hostage, and he sends the rest of the brothers back. So they go back with food, but Shimon is held hostage back in Mitzrayim. The brothers go home, they bring food, but, sorry dad, we lost another one of your sons. Like, repeat, you know? It happened once already, you know? They came home with a blood-soaked, you know, cloak. You know, sorry, Dad.
They didn't lose it.
What?
She just was supposed to eat. They didn't lose it. Shimon?
Okay, no, fine.
Joseph,
but
Joseph. I'm saying, like, Joseph died by himself. It's not like they killed him.
Okay, true, true. But I'm saying they brought... This is the second time they're bringing a message back to their father saying, we lost one.
Yeah.
You know, you have 11 left. It's okay, you know. Or you have 10 left, it'll be okay. But, a good parent, you know, every single one of them is the entire world, right? So they come back and, we lost one, we left him in prison. So at that moment, who stands up? And I gave you this inside. Nope.
Not yet.
At that moment, who stands up? Reuven stands up. Reuven stands up and he goes to his father Yaakov and he says, the man who's in charge in Egypt, he made us a deal. We told him we had another brother back at home that we didn't bring with us. And he said, I'll make you a deal. He said, if you bring that other brother back, then I'll give you this brother. I'll give you Shimon. So obviously Yaakov says to them, you fools. Why did you tell them you had another brother? Why couldn't you just, done your job, go there, get the food, and come home? So Yaakov says to them, and this is the bolt and the psukim that we'll just read together quick. Vayomer elem Yaakov. Yaakov the father says to them, you've already sikalti me, you've already made me a mourner, you've already made me, a bereaved father because I've lost Yosef once, and now I don't have Shimon, and now you want to take Binyamin back down there? Binyamin, my youngest son, right? My Ben Zakunim, right? The last one that I have for my beloved Rachel. You want to take him? And what does Reuben say? Yes, I want to take him. And says, Reuben, I'll make you a deal. It's one of the strangest deals of all time. Anybody know the deal that Reuben makes with Yaakov? In Pasuk Lamed Zayin, Vayomer Reuben el Aviv Leimor et Shnei Banai Tamis Simlo Avienu Elecha. Dad, I'll make you a deal. If I don't bring Binyamin back, if something goes wrong, it's okay. You can kill my two sons. Your two
grandchildren.
Huh. Well, that's odd. Like, what kind of deal is that? And obviously, Yaakov says, no, I'm not making that deal. Lo yered b'nimechem, I'm not giving you Binyamin. His kiachid mates, his brother's dead. V'ulavaro nishar, he's the only one left from Rachel to me. And something terrible is going to happen. And it's going to be my misery. I'm going to be wallowing in my misery for the rest of my life. I can't let it happen.
So from
curtain close.
From his perspective, this great deal means he loses his son and Yaakov.
Exactly, right? And for Yaakov, it's a no-brainer. I'm sorry. That deal does not compute, and I'm not letting you go. The curtain closes. The curtain opens with what's the next parak. Now, in Chazal's Mesorah, I don't want to get too bogged down in this, but it's actually there's actually no break. There's actually no break in the psukim which is our Mesorah. These prakim, right? This is the beginning of Parak Mem Gimel. It's the end of chapter 42 and the beginning of chapter 43. There's actually no break in the psukim. I made it the next paragraph, but really in the Torah, it's not the next paragraph. It's just continuing, which is fascinating. Why? Because really there is seemingly a break in the action. But the curtain comes up, and the Torah says, the harav kavi baretz. The famine was once again very, very intense in the land. They had nothing to eat. They were dying. The whole family was starving, and the family was again on the edge of despair. So what happens? Yaakov says to the brothers, we have nothing to eat. You have to go down to Mitzrayim again. And we need food. So Yehuda says, but Dad, we told you already. They said, don't bother coming back unless you bring the youngest son, unless you bring Binyamin. So Yaakov says, I can't believe you told them that you have another brother. I can't let you take him. So now Yehuda steps up. Reuben had stepped up the first time, and now Yehuda steps up. And what does he say? He says, Dad, we have no choice. You have to send him. V'nakuma will get up. V'nelcha will go. V'nichya, we will live. V'lo namus, and we will not die. Gam anachnu, us. Gam ata, you. Gam tapeinu, and our children. Now, does he sell that with anything?
No.
Does he try to make any deals? He just says, we're going to get up. We're going to go. We're going to live. We're not going to die. Me, you, the kids, the grandkids, we're going to make it.
Grandkids.
The grandkids. Everybody. But he doesn't sell it. Reuben tried to give him some sort of a deal. Let's make a deal. Yehuda, no deal. But except for what? Anochi arvenu. I dedicate myself if I don't bring him back to you. And I will have sinned from you all of my days. Rashi actually says, and I'm even Olam Haba, this will be eternally, it'll be my eternal loss. What's the difference between Reuven and Yehuda? So one difference, huge difference, that I underlined it, which is clear in the Pesukim, is the father that they are communicating with actually changes names.
Yaakov.
Who is Reuven communicating with?
Yaakov.
Who is Yehuda communicating with?
Yisrael.
What does that indicate? So this is a massive topic in all of Chumash, all of Tanakh really, and all of Chazal. When Yaakov is referred to as Yaakov, and when Yaakov is referred to as Yisrael, and what their meanings are, what their indications are. And there's many different approaches, many different levels, many different layers of the significance of Yaakov being referred to Yaakov, and when he's referred to as Yisrael. Unlike Avram, that Gemara in Brachos actually says, it's a halacha. Once Avram's name was changed from Avram without a hay to Avraham with a hay, it became usher forever to call him Avram. You can't call, he's forever Avraham, and you can't call him Avram anymore. But Yaakov, when he had a name change, so it wasn't an actual name change, because okay, that's true. But then Hashem did it. Hashem actually ended up doing it another time. But he still goes back and forth, not only his whole life, but for the rest of Tanakh. Sometimes he's referred to as Yaakov. Sometimes he's referred to as Yisrael. It changes many, many different times. There's many, many different approaches. What each one means, what Yaakov indicates, what Yisrael indicates, right? Sometimes. One famous approach is that Yaakov indicates, Yaakov as he pertains to Esav, the interplay between the Jewish people and the nations. Yaakov is Yaakov and Esav, whereas Yisrael is the Jewish people in our lofty, transcendent state of being above the nations, chosen, sanctified. But during his lifetime. During his lifetime, he even plays different roles, or he appears in different ways. And I think here, it's indicated very, very strongly. Who does Reuven appeal to? Reuven appeals to Yaakov, the father of this family. As a father, he cannot possibly allow his son Binyamin to go down. He doesn't want to hear of losing two grandsons. The whole thing doesn't compute to Yaakov the father. But when Yehuda approaches him, he doesn't approach Yaakov as the father of this family. He approaches Yisrael. What is the Yisrael identity?
An Eved Hashem,
but it's much more also, additionally, deeper about his role in the greater scheme and unraveling and unrolling of Jewish history. Not as an individual and a father in his own unit, but as the link in the chain of the Avos into the rest of the continuation of Jewish history. As the name indicates, Yisrael is not an individual. Yisrael is a nation. Yisrael represents the entirety of the Jewish people and the entirety of Jewish history and Jewish destiny. Yehuda appears to Yisrael, approaches Yisrael. Yehuda appeals to Yisrael. He says, on a family level, you're absolutely right. The calculus does not compute. We cannot take this risk on a family level. But Yehuda knows this is not about a family. This is about Jewish destiny. Yehuda knows this is about the future of the Jewish people. He knows that if we don't do this, not only will this family die in starvation and famine, but Yehuda has already picked up on, and he himself underwent the story of Tamar in last week's parasha and Peretz, and he himself has started to, you know, take on a more active role in Jewish destiny, which is coming out here in this week's parasha, especially next week's parasha, Vayigash Yehuda, where Yehuda really, really takes a centerpiece role in this greater narrative of Jewish destiny. But Yehuda realizes that this has to happen, not for the family, but for Klal Yisrael as a whole. For this enterprise of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, of the Avos, and the prophecies and the promises and the hopes and dreams of what we're going to become, this is the next step. Yehuda knows that. He appeals to Yisrael and he says, we don't have a choice. This must happen. We must go down. Is it a guarantee? There's no guarantees. There's no guarantees. Sometimes things get rough. Sometimes there's failure. But sometimes there's no choice. And we simply must do this. They come down to Mitzrayim. And as soon as Yosef sees them, he tells his people of his house, slaughter up some cows, make a barbecue, we're having a Hanukkah party. Why?
This is the second time? Again?
No, that's the time. That's the time when he says this. That's the time when he says we're having this Hanukkah party. And that's where the Shilta Giborim says the remnant to Hanukkah. So I would like to propose, humbly, why is Yosef throwing a Hanukkah party at that moment? Because let's just review. What's the story of Hanukkah? The story of Hanukkah is that same crossroads of reality. And really, the truth of the matter is, it's a crossroads of reality, it's a crossroads of Jewish history that the Jewish people have stood at time and time again throughout our history. Of what? It looks hopeless. It looks bleak. We don't have a chance in Teva, in nature. We can't actually make it, but we don't have a choice. When the Hashmonaim realized that the Yevanim, the Assyrian Greeks, were A, wreaking havoc on the spiritual, philosophical world and the assimilation and the culture, what it was doing to the Jewish people during those days of Bayesheni, during the days of the second Beis HaMikdash, and they saw this empire totally overwhelming, you know, the Jewish nation at the time, they said, we don't have a choice. Do we have a chance of beating them militarily? We don't have a chance. We can't possibly beat them. But what's the other option? What's the other option? Give up? Lie down? The continuation of Jewish history depends on difficult decisions in the most difficult of moments. And the Hashmonaim, they said, Mi chamocha ba'ilim Hashem, makabi, mi la Hashem elai. We gotta go for it. We gotta go for it. Can we do it? Not logically. Not in Teva. Not in the natural order of things. But when they went for it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made them a vessel, made them a kli to be able to make one of the most tremendous miracles of our history come to fruition. Rabban Biad Matan, Tamei Biad Tahorim, as we're saying many times throughout the day. And that comes from the Jewish value of the willingness to do whatever we possibly can. Even when it defies logic, even when it's a mission that's doomed to failure. But we have to do whatever we possibly can. And Yehuda was saying to Yaakov Avinu, we don't have a choice. We simply must do whatever we can in our power to take this next step for the Jewish people. And Yosef, when he saw the brothers come back, Yosef was so smart. Yosef was, everything was calculated. His whole, you know, especially after rising to the top, everything, when he sends the brothers back the first time and challenges them to come down a second time, he's challenging them on this very nekuda. He knows that Yaakov as a father will not let Binyamin come. He knows how much Yaakov loves Binyamin. He knows how much Yaakov loved him, and he knows they can't possibly get Yaakov to allow Binyamin to come. What's the only chance they have? If one of the brothers, or if the brothers as a whole, as Yehuda did, would be able to approach Yaakov and said, Abba, Yisrael, we have to give everything we can. And therefore, when Yosef sees them come down a second time, he knows that they now have passed this test of Jewish dedication. And Yosef sees them coming and he says, Happy Hanukkah. Let's make a Hanukkah party. Why? Because Yosef saw the Mesiris Nefesh of the brothers, the Mesiris Nefesh of Yehuda, willing to take Binyamin into his own hands, willing to take responsibility, to give up everything, because this is what was necessary for the next stage of Jewish history. And when Yosef sees that, he celebrates Hanukkah at that very moment. And this is a very, very critical Indian of Hanukkah. This will finish. There is a famous idea, concluding thoughts. There is a famous Gemara. The Gemara says that the light of Hanukkah is even more profound than the light of Shabbos, right? Mm-hmm. The way the Gemara says in Halacha is the wicks and the oils that you can use that you can't use on Shabbos, you're allowed to use those on Hanukkah. Meaning Hanukkah has a little more of an extensive level of depth, level of light. Says the Shem Yishmuel, why is that so? Why is Hanukkah maybe even a higher, more powerful light than Shabbos? So says the Shem Yishmuel, Dihini ma she'in lehem aliyah b'Shabbos u'macham azgasus v'obey achomer she'mafzik v'chotz v'nei or shel Shabbos. Achanukah she'zachu Yisrael macham az mesir shnefesh. Hanukkah was something that we gained, that we earned. It wasn't like Pesach, which was called in Isorusa Mila'ila, in Isorusa from above, in where God brought these tremendous miracles down from us. We didn't earn them, we didn't work for them. Hanukkah all came from this love and dedication and passion from below. From that, that's an everlasting imprint. The energy from that Mesiras Nefesh of the Jewish people in Hanukkah will last for generations and give the ability for any Jew who connects to that light tremendous inspiration. And perhaps this also answers, and this is brought down, perhaps this also answers the famous question of Beis Yosef. The Beis Yosef famously asked, really, how many nights of miracle were there? There are only 7 nights of miracle, right? Because there was enough oil for one night. So the Beis Yosef famously asked, we should only celebrate 7 nights of miracles. So this is a question, there's one sefer put out with 100 answers to this question, and another sefer put out with 500 answers to this question. There's tons and tons and tons of answers to this question. Even I heard a Rabbi Vine said, really, there are many of them are the exact, are like, just like one letter, one word difference. But Lamai said, there's tens and tens and tens and tens of answers to this question. If it's really 7 nights of miracle, why do we celebrate for 8 nights? Perhaps this is an answer. 7 nights celebrating the miracle of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, making a supernatural nace that the oil lasted, but one night we celebrate the unbelievable miracle of the Jew being able to muster this courage, to muster this strength, to muster this level of dedication, to be able to make these most unbelievable decisions in order to continue the progression and the destiny of the Jewish people. And maybe that's the 8th miracle. And lastly, the Gemara in Yuma says that Hanukkah is the very last miracle. Hanukkah is the last miracle. The Gemara says, what about, the Gemara says, Purim is the last miracle. But the Gemara says, what about Hanukkah? Isn't Hanukkah the last miracle? The Gemara says, no. Purim is the last miracle that is written down. Purim is the last miracle of Tanakh. But Hanukkah is the real last miracle of Jewish history. And that's the last miracle that we celebrate in Jewish history. Why is Hanukkah the last miracle? Why is Hanukkah the last miracle? Because every miracle in Jewish history up till then were miracles that were what? That were from God, right? But now we're going to go in, right? Hanukkah is the light that's going to carry us for over 2,000 years of exile. It's the last story. It's the last big yuntif. It's the last thing that Chazal established that we're going to celebrate in Jewish history. Why? Because Hanukkah shows us that we intrinsically as a Jewish people, we internally, when God will go into hiding, when God will go behind the curtain of reality for 2,000 years with no Beis HaMikdash, in exile, without prophecy, without any revelation like there was during the days of the first Beis HaMikdash and beforehand and even in the second Beis HaMikdash a little bit, when we go into this dark reality, Chanukah is the very last miracle. Why? Because it's the miracle that shows us that we as Jews can make miracles happen. And that's the miracle that we need to have with us to carry us during the darkest days of our history. That we as Klal Yisrael, as a people, but also each and every single one of us individually, if we have the courage and if we have the inspiration to make those very difficult decisions for the sake of our people, then we ourselves can be conduits of the greatest miracles, just like the miracles that happened in the days of the Beis HaMikdash, in the days of the Midbar, in the days of the Avos. And that's the last miracle which will carry us through 2,000 years of Gullus, of dark exile. And that's what we take from Chanukah. When we light these candles, we realize that we ourselves have the ability to bring this light into the world. We ourselves have this tremendous koach within each and every single one of us. Near each base, so every single Jew, every single Jewish home can be conduits of this light to the world. And we hope that with the light that we bring into the world through this Chanukah, I will be zochah to see the ultimate light, or Chadash al Tzion, Tayer v'nizke chulanu v'hir le'oro, and that hopefully the light that we bring into the world this Chanukah will culminate in the ultimate light and the Binyan Beis HaMikdash from here b'yameinu. Wish everybody a feilchem Chanukah, a good Shabbos, a good break, and until next time.
Shabbat.
Sam, you switched into this year.